Good evening. James McCann here with my Science Hour, November 26, 2015, Thanksgiving Day 2015. My goodness, where did this year go? If you're like me, I mean, it's just, this was a flash in the pan, and goodbye 2015. Oh my goodness, this year just flew by. But I'm not going to talk any more about that tonight. The issue tonight, two big topics. I'm going to give an update, water report, worldwide water report. This is very important. California, 6 months away from having what they call 1 million water or climate refugees, where they open up the tap and nothing comes out. I don't care who you are, what kind of good job you got, what kind of industry is going on, whatever. If you're retired, you got a good income. If you open that tap and no water comes out, you have a major problem. You can't live there anymore. If you live in a place where you open up the tap and bad water comes out, you have a problem. 1 billion of the approximately 7 billion people in the earth today depend on contaminated surface water as their only source of water. And I've traveled around the world. I've seen this where, and I'm sorry to start out Thanksgiving Day with such a story, but we have to understand that as we sit around and enjoy the good life, so to speak, there are the vast majority of the people on this planet do not have a good life and never have even imagined a good life. But I was in a place last year. I was taking a coastal trip, and I saw all these people walking down the road with containers. They were empty containers, the people going in one direction, and they were full containers going in the other direction. And I said, well, pretty obvious there's a water source. And being a person who's covers water as a topic, I was very interested to see what was the source of water. So we get down the road, and I look out in this field, and all the people are standing there kind of in a line around this puddle that couldn't have been more than 100 feet in diameter. And there it was, in a cow pasture, with cows grazing off in the distance, so all this sediment is running into this pond, a shallow pond, and the people are out there, you know, knee-deep in the water, filling their jugs and going back home. That was their source of water, contaminated surface water in a very, very poverty-stricken area. The housing was just whatever board or piece of metal roofing or whatever they could put up, lean up against something, that was their housing, an extremely poverty-stricken area. The local government did not do anything to help these people. There was no water source. There was no attempt to drill for water. Extremely, extremely bad conditions. And, you know, how much water can you carry 5 miles? In these, you know, various, some people had like clear 2-liter pop containers to put it in. Some people had more advanced system. One guy had a bicycle with four, what looked like 5-gallon square containers of water. And he had a bicycle. He could actually go back and carry his water that way. But unbelievable. A whole town depending on that pond for water. But before I continue with that, there's some good issues regarding water, and then there's the World Water Report is something that is really not very positive. But this is all contrived. We do not have a water shortage worldwide. We have a water management problem. And water is becoming like oil. You're going to be paying for it, and you're going to be paying more and more. And there's going to be less and less, and the quality is going to be going down. Now, even in the, say, the rural United States area, there's a lot of pollution in the groundwater. So people, even though you might live in a city and you get your well water and it looks nice and clear when it comes out the tap, there's a lot of bad stuff in that water. My other main science topic tonight I'll be talking about is really where should we be today? And this is a topic that I want people to listen to because there are a lot of new listeners on a night like tonight. People are visiting and somebody says, hey, I don't want to miss the James McCanney Science Hour. I want to hear what he has to say tonight. So I'm purposefully picking a topic that is more general than just science. The question is, where should we be these days in this year 2015? Where should the world be? Where should the United States be as a economic and industrial and scientific leader in the world? Where should we be? What should really be the status today? So what I'm going to go back is about 150 years, and many times in our lives we have a Y in the road, and we take one direction, in that other direction we don't know what would happen or what would have happened if we would have gone that way, and we all have these. But as a nation, as a world, if we would have taken another direction about 150 years ago, well, where would we be today? And that's the question. But first, a quick topic. I was rather surprised. Of course, we've all heard the chatter that NASA wants to go to Mars. And basically, it's something on somebody's drawing board. They have a lot of nice artwork. But and they've got some, this past week, they had 11 new companies they've made associations with to do development like robotics and various other things, all trying to justify money coming out of Congress for this mission to Mars. They say they want to go there in like 2030 or something like that. They actually put a bid out for hiring astronauts. But I thought it was kind of comical. By the time they go to Mars, most of these astronauts that they would hire today would be ready for retirement. And so there's no need to hire astronauts if you're not going to go for the next 20 years. But the point I wanted to make here is that National Geographic, which is typically a rah-rah NASA, everything NASA does is great type of glossy magazine, National Geographic came out with an article saying that basically NASA doesn't have the wherewithal to go to outer space, let alone Mars. And this is very interesting, and they quoted a time period of 70 years. And literally, right now in 2015, if you go back to the 1940s, is when the real space program began. It eventually became the civilian space program, which eventually became NASA. But literally, back in, and they show these diagrams that Wernher von Braun in the 1940s drew these futuristic drawings of little habitats on Mars. So this idea is not something that's new and amazing. This has been around literally for 70 years, and the point of National Geographic is that NASA has no more ability or no more planning today than they did 70 years ago. It's all artwork on somebody's table. The drawings are a little different. They look a little more modern than the ones that came out with Wernher von Braun in 1948. In fact, you know, so literally 70 years of artwork and nothing resulting. But the real problem with NASA going to Mars is they haven't been out of low Earth orbit since 1974, literally. And so in, when the alleged Apollo program was going on, I'm not going to go there tonight, but they have not been out of low Earth orbit since then. Now, going into outer space has a whole myriad of problems when you get out of low Earth orbit. It's called radiation. And I read the write-ups, the NASA write-ups, etc. Nowhere in any of the write-ups, in any of the artwork or anything, do they talk about that little teeny but big elephant in the room type of problem. They don't know how bad the radiation is. They don't know what causes it. And they don't know what to do about it. In a trip to Mars, you're talking out in the open open space. You're not being protected by the Earth's geomagnetic field or the plasma magnetic field of Earth that blocks us from the solar wind, does a lot of protection. all of that charged particle activity from the sun, you are exposed to it, and for a very long period of time, including all the time on Mars. No matter where you put your base on Mars, you're going to be exposed by solar radiation. Even if you're up at the North Pole, hidden behind a mountaintop, and you think, oh, maybe here we're shielded from the radiation from the sun. No, because at the North Pole and the South Pole of Earth, just like Mars, that's where the majority of radiation activity occurs. Very interesting. So, anyway, this past week, Pepsi, excuse me for coughing and laughing here, but Pepsi-Cola Company, international bottling company of soft drinks, bottled water, etc., came out with a video, and it's called the Black Knight Satellite. And now, what are these people thinking? It's like a skippity-doo, happy everybody, and they show a lot of young people skipping around, and everybody's happy, looking at their cell phones, and they're saying, the aliens are coming. And I'm going, what on earth? Are they smoking something funny here in the boardroom of Pepsi, or what on earth is going on? The video lasts 6 minutes, and it's a highly polished. This is a Hollywood production, but very quickly put together video with major actors, singers, and a lot of footage actually taken from outer space. So, but the thing is, number one, this was put together very rapidly. Number two, it's this like skippity-doo. We want the whole world to hold hands and be together, and everything's wonderful because the aliens are coming, and we're going to all love them, and they're going to love us. And I'm like, whatever. And the strange thing about this, the whole video clip on YouTube is 13 minutes long. Only 6 minutes of it are the actual video. The last 7 minutes are credits. And I'm like, what on earth? What on earth is a bottling company, Pepsi, doing putting this out? And I don't even want to speculate. But all I can say is that this is a diversion, clearly. And one thing that I'll try and tie this into, when the Pope came to New York, September 23rd and to the 28th, actually, he was in New York. But he was supposed to, on his public agenda, the Pope, this is the Vatican, the Pope, you know, the guy that's between us and God, whatever, excuse me for being a little blunt here, but one on his agenda was to talk about the alien issue and to expose the fact that the Vatican had been talking to aliens for a long time, like hundreds of years. This was the claim. And of course, the Pope didn't ever get to that point because he had some other issues that he wasn't, his trip was not a smashing success, because the press basically cornered him on the other issues within the organization of the Catholic Church, not the least of which was pedophilia and other issues like that. So the Pope was not doing real good in a what you'd call a PR position. So he didn't talk about the alien issue. He didn't disclose anything. They told him, in fact, I have this word from insiders, that they told the Pope, don't talk about that, because he wasn't doing very well. Well, all of a sudden, 6 weeks later, Pepsi comes out with this video. And I think you should watch it, because I think you, like me, are going to say two things. What on earth is Pepsi thinking? Why are they doing this? Who's prompting them to do this? And what's the message here? Because what it is like, it starts out, and the Black Knight Satellite is a satellite, by the way. Let me clarify this. The Black Knight Satellite is a real satellite. It's in high Earth orbit, It's been there long before we ever thought about going into space, so it's certainly from some intelligent race. Who knows if they're from someplace else or from some past civilization on this planet? We don't know. It seems to be active. It seems to be doing things, not just there static. And this is well known in the military, and not only is there the Black Knight satellite, there are others. And so this is not a lot of information, but for Pepsi to come out and expose this satellite called the Black Knight satellite and then make it into this feely-good, the aliens are coming, oh, doggone, they're just going to love us and we're going to be happy and we're all going to skip around and all the kids are going to, you know, and let me put this into perspective. As ISIS is attacking Paris, France, they're threatening to attack the United States in the same type of terrorists, you know, walk into a restaurant or a theater or a ball game or something like that and start shooting people. And then this Pepsi video comes out with aliens, and everybody's supposed to love them and they're going to love us. And, you know, excuse me, but does anybody out there have a clue what this is all about or why they're doing this? We'll have to stay tuned, but anyway, I won't spend any more time on that. But it's just such an off-the-wall, out-of-place, you know, with such a strange message coming from Pepsi-Cola Company. And you know what I like, though, were the blog notes down below. And some of the blog notes, like maybe Pepsi wants to be the first one to sell to aliens and beat Coca-Cola. You know, so there's a lot of comical blog notes at the bottom of these videos. Anyway, that's an open question, and we're going to have to wait and see where this one goes, because I can't even predict, and I certainly can't tell you the rationale. Okay, enough of that. Just a message about ownership of science. The scientific community is completely top-down owned and controlled. 99.9999% of the scientists, engineers, and science and engineering is top-down controlled by the federal government. Literally, everybody, even if you work in a private industry, if you work in telecommunications, whatever you work in, all of this is top-down controlled by the federal government. So science and scientists, engineering, and engineers, technology in general, communications, all of these things are owned by the federal government. And now I want to define a term here. And this is a term that I came up because last night I was a guest on a new venue for me. Now I've been on probably almost all radio shows on the planet. The only radio show that I can think of in terms of top major radio shows on the planet, the only one that I have not been on is Alex Jones. And everybody's wondering, scratching their heads, why that is. But, well, be that as it may, there's probably a few reasons for that. But at any rate, I came up with a term, and it's called scepter. S-C-E-P-T-E-R. A scepter is what the king holds. You know, he sits on his throne, holds the scepter, and that's his symbol of power. And so, and when I was doing this, by the way, I was not aware that there was a new James Bond movie out by the with a different spelling, also with the name Scepter. You could almost re-juggle the letters here. I don't know if that's coincidence or whatever. That's not like, of course, that movie was made long before I came up with this concept. But anyway, scepter is a mnemonic, and it means something. If you look on my homepage, if you scroll down just a little bit on one of the top tables on my webpage, jmccsci.com, you'll see a short write-up. And I don't want to repeat that on the air, because you can go to the webpage and read it. Scepter, what does that mean? And it's exactly like I said, the first S represents science. And now, by the way, these are things that are controlled from the top down. In other words, the people that basically control the world, if you come up to the world banking empire, and for people out there who are new listeners, you have to understand that our banking system in the United States, the Federal Reserve, its collections agency, the IRS, are not federal agencies. These are independent agencies. Once a long time ago, I got a kick out of Barbara Walters was interviewing President Reagan back in the Reagan era. And she said there was something economic going on. And she said, well, why don't you just go over and tell that Greenspan over at the Federal Reserve where the bear, you know what, in the woods. And Reagan looks at her and he says, ma'am, the Federal Reserve is an autonomous organization, independent agency or bank. Says, I don't have anything to do with them. And Barbara Walters does not understand this. She doesn't understand the concept, nor what Reagan just said to her. And she asked the question three times. And he kept coming back and saying, lady, the Federal Reserve tells me what to do. I don't tell the Federal Reserve what to do. And so anyway, it's just a, you know, one of those misconceptions that the Federal Reserve is somehow the bank of the United States. No, it's a branch of the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, which is basically the Rothschild banking empire. But at any rate, the term scepter is relative to that banking empire, which controls basically the, you know, the U.S. military, the militaries of other countries, etc. So if you don't understand that, you should do some studying to understand the real groups of people who run this planet. The, you know, the Bushes, the Clintons, the Obamas, they're just players. They're just middle marionette, you know, puppets in the middle of this whole scheme. So a scepter is a control. It's a level of control of literally everything that's going on the planet today. So once again, the scepter, I'll read off these demonic items: science, communications, engineering, press, or the media is the P, T is for technology, E is for education, and R is for resources. So if you look at the control mechanisms in the world today, and basically we are all just little clogs in a wheel out here, the real elements of control, if you look at geoengineering, GMO foods, pharmaceutical industry, the medical industry, government now being involved in insurance and medicine, and the use of fluoridated water, the list goes on and on. So if you look at this, all of these fall somewhere under this term scepter, and it's literally the power stick used to control the world. And so the ownership of science is one of those, and that's a topic I deal with all the time, and that's what I try and illuminate on this show. And not only show that, but I also try to talk about the replacement, where my science replaces what you would standard hear as standard science in the, you know, the media. The other thing you have to understand about scepter, science, communications, engineering, the press or the media, technology, education, and resources, the control of all of these, is that there are levels of information flow. Tier one levels of information are things that you never see. This is information by scientists, by engineers, by think tanks, people who do political analysis, try and control political direction, etc., of the world. And this information, or for another example, just the identification of world water resources, because these same groups control oil, now they control water. And then they work through their tier two and tier three layers that are publicly visible, and to do and manipulate all of this. But the tier one layer you don't see. You never see their faces. My rule is, if you see their names and faces, they are not in tier one. And so they could be scientists or engineers or geologists, or they could be political analysts, they could, or other people. And all of that happens completely out of these Washington think tanks, Occasionally you get a word out from them to the public, but that's typically total misinformation. And you don't see the upper workings of this. And all of this goes up the ladder to the central chain of command. And when I first personally met these groups of people back in the early 1980s, I was out in Los Angeles dealing with venture capital firms, and the people that were operating these firms were investing primarily in military and military-related or aerospace-related ventures. That's who I was talking with, because I had my own aerospace programs that I was dealing with, some of them electric magnetic propulsion systems, etc. And so I was dealing with these venture capital firms, and there were the old guys that came around, and they were basically managing things. But basically, on a day-to-day basis, you dealt with young guys. They're maybe 25 to 30 years old, dressed very nicely in suits, drove the nicest sports cars, would go up to congressmen and say, "Hey, I want, by the way, if you hear a little noise, I got a little construction going on in the background. I hope that's not too visible here, too much of a distraction." But these young guys, and I'm going, "Wow, man." And these guys spoke multiple foreign languages. They had the most beautiful wives. I mean, they were just, I'm like, "Man, you know, where did these guys go to college? I went to the wrong college. How do you get a job like this?" And what I eventually ended up realizing, that these were the kids of the world banking families. They were Arabs, they were Jewish, they were from Ireland, they were from, you know, so Catholics. They were all denominations, and they all worked together in these offices. And they could go into a congressman's office and say, "I want this project funded, and I need $10 million tomorrow." And that money would be there, and I'm going, "Whoa, what's going on here?" I realized that these were the kids that were in the family of the international bankers. So at any rate, that was my first introduction, and then I had later had many more insights into these families, etc., and the kids, and the, you know, the operation of how the military-industrial complex gets funded. And another little example, I thought that, for example, U.S. development of technology was very secret. It was done in secret and held very secretly. And for example, I knew a guy in Los Angeles, an engineer, and he worked for McDonnell Douglas. He developed what is known as the shark nose for at the time it was the F-16 fighter plane, and it gave it the ability to fly sideways and shoot its guns and rockets and stuff. It could flip sideways, drop those big tails horizontally. It could fly sideways and then flip back and fly forward again. And this was called the tiger shark nose. Anyway, I thought, "Man, that's top secret. That would give the U.S. an advantage in any warfare situation." And then the top guys in these venture capital firms, who were also arms dealers, that was a race. It was literally a race for them to get to Russia, because the first guy that got to Russia with the plans was the guy that got the sale to sell that technology to the Russians. And then it became obvious to me later that the whole idea of keeping the balance of military power was necessary to not let any country get militarily out of hand. And so anyway, then I realized that this whole Cold War was a big dog and pony show to keep the United States thinking that Russia was going to bomb us at any second, and vice versa, the Russians thinking that we were going to bomb them at any second. For 50 years, the world was entangled in this Cold War, strapped everybody to the bone financially to support this. Reagan built his Star Wars program, the most costly military program in history, which never produced a thing, essentially. We're still dealing with the same kind of technology. We're basically dealing with advanced World War II technology today. But the point is that this was all part of the world banking control mechanism to keep everybody out there strapped in, you know, paying these ungodly amounts of taxes. But scepter is a term. I encourage you to go to my webpage and read that little write-up. But once again, it's the control of science, communications, engineering, the press and the media, technology, education, and the last big one is resources. Resources includes personnel, like science and scientists, etc. But not the least of which would be energy, water, lithium, all the minerals, etc. So at any rate, very important topic. Go to my webpage and read that. The webpage, jmccsci.com, just seven letters. Last night, by the way, I wanted to reiterate that I was on a new venue for me. It's called thelibertybeacon.com. And so I've become a staff writer for them dealing with science. And so that's a very powerful voice and a new medium for my work to get out there, because I am an independent scientist. I'm the only one that I know of, and I know a lot of people in the scientific community. I don't know of a single other scientist, real scientist. I mean, one that has credentials, one that's worked teaching at a major university, in industry. I worked in the telecommunications industry for half of my career. I've taught at the university level, physics, mathematics, computer science, and astronomy at the university level for about 10 years of my life. Some of that in foreign languages. So at any rate, to be, you know, there's a lot of internet wannabe scientists out there, but they don't have any background or real knowledge of science, because anybody can be anything they want to be on the internet today. The Liberty Beacon with a the in the front, thelibertybeacon.com. Go check that out. I believe they have the archive there of the show I did last night, and the topic was economic collapse. That was the topic of last night's show, so I encourage you to go listen to that. And also, I'll be doing a bit more writing for that group in the future. Very interesting, because here's the point. We talk a lot about, or I do, and other talk show hosts today talk a lot about the negative things going on in the world, the things that really affect us drastically. I'll be doing the water report here in a minute. But there are people who are moving in a positive direction, and that's something that I want to do, because there are solutions. And there are solutions that people can make happen, people like you and me, that we can make these things happen in a positive direction. Because if you're going to wait for the government to do something, it's like that cartoon of a guy, it's a skeleton sitting on a park bench, and it's a joke. It could be a woman sitting there or a man sitting there, whatever, on a park bench, and it says, waiting for the perfect woman. And or if it's a woman, it says, waiting for the perfect man. Anyway, that's kind of like waiting for the perfect government. If you're waiting for the government to do something, don't hold your breath, because it ain't going to happen. It hasn't happened in the past. Certainly not going to happen in the future. But what I'm doing, not only do I identify problems, but I also point out solutions. And so, you know, energy, my wing generator is in development. Right now, we're dealing with some of the final aspects of getting this thing commercialized. The wing generator is a new design of wind turbine to extract energy from the wind. It's very efficient, and also it can be scaled up to extremely large sizes, where we can replace nuclear and coal burning power plants, eventually replace petrol as a source of fuel for automobiles going completely electric. And so if you take the wind and convert it to energy, and all of a sudden make energy extremely inexpensive, that's going to change society as we know it today. That's one of the solutions. Another one is water. As I said, we don't have a water shortage problem. We have a water management problem. And the governments are not taking the initiative to make sure that everybody in their country has clean water. But there is a way to deal with that. There is abundant water, and there's a way to clean the water that's there. And by the way, I sell water filters on my website. That whole business is going to take a big turn in a very positive direction here. It's already taken that turn. I just can't talk about it on the air yet. But we're going to move these into the hands of poor people around the planet. And so that means that instead of those people going down that road, and I know that was a really terrible story to open up on Thanksgiving Day, but the positive side is that in the future, we're going to be able to get clean water to those people. And we're going to have projects, and I know there's lots of projects out there around the world. There's many, many projects to help the world bring clean water. So this is going to add to that. And what we have to do is not only bring water to all the places around the world, but also be ready for natural disasters. If you see a natural disaster, the first thing they do is they come in with truckloads of bottled water. Well, that's not a solution. That's a Band-Aid. Because those people, when the truck leaves and all the bottled water gets sold and the plastic bottles are thrown in the rain, washes them out to sea, and they start polluting the beaches, that's not a solution. What the people need is a source of fresh water on an ongoing basis into the future. So at any rate, this is a big project, but we're going to do it by individuals. Individuals who have a lot of backing, people who have a lot of ability to move in this direction. And as it happens, I'll be able to talk to you more about that in the future. But there is a bright side of this. There are people that want to work. They see that I have solutions, and we're going to work together to implement those solutions. So energy, water, those are two of the biggest issues on the planet today. If you could solve those, you would solve a lot of the problems. Also, banking. That's when I talked tonight about my Thanksgiving message, where the world should be today. If you look at the banking industry, etc., what we got to do is turn that around. Because, once again, the economic situation, like I say, if we took that Y in the road back in the 1800s, today, you wouldn't, well, I'll talk about that in a minute. So, once again, I want you to go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and read the article. It's very short, takes you 5 minutes, on SCEPTER, S-C-E-P-T-E-R, Science, Communications, Engineering, the Press, Media, Technology, Education, and Resources, the control of those. And one thing is to identify a problem. Another one is to find a solution, a real solution. Now to talk about water. Today, 1 billion people depend on contaminated surface water for daily use. Here is the unfortunate part. Every year, 2 million children die of diseases related to the need of clean water. Most of the water that these people have to consume would make you sick. Now, they would take it home, these containers of water, and that's all they have, maybe 5 gallons, 10 gallons of water, before they make that trip back 5 miles down the road to pick up some more water. And that water hole, when I saw it, was drying up. So these people really did not have a source of water at all. And there are droughts in certain areas. There were parts of just all over the world where there have been droughts recently, and the people, their water sources have been drying up, the surface water, that is, because they don't have the ability to drill wells and have clean water. At that place where the water was, or the cow field, if you would have drilled there probably 50, 100 feet, you could have a well with fresh water, and those people could come and get literally fresh water, 1,000 times better than that polluted water in that surface pond. But there's 1 billion people in the world, but if depending on contaminated surface water, but 4 billion people do not have sanitary water. 4 billion people on this planet do not have enough water on a daily basis, and they say 20 gallons a day per person. That is the daily requirement for you to shower, hygiene, cook, clean dishes, all the sanitary needs of a person, 20 gallons per day per person. And that's in a third world country. In the United States, we use a lot more than that per person. If most people were limited to 5 gallons per day, they would be surprised how little a bit of water that is compared to what they currently use. So Earth has a giant problem dealing with water. And also look at the Greenland and the Antarctic ice caps melting. I went to an Omni Theater, an IMAX Omni Theater, and it was about the, I forget what the topic was, but anyway, the opening scene is a shelf. It's an ice shelf in Antarctica, and it's during the Arctic summer. So the water is just shooting off the top of these. There's these rivers that are melting, and it's coming off. And this water is just shooting like a river off the edge of this iceberg, and it falls. That fresh water falls into the ocean is just mixed with seawater. And I thought, man, if you could just have a big container there, a big plastic container, and put it, that water into these containers and then tow them up to places that need water, that would be a solution. But then you got the problem that now you have to burn diesel fuel to move, or oil, whatever, to move these big water bags. And by the way, there's a guy in California, his name escapes me right now. It's something like Scarf or something like that, but I forget. Anyway, he's invented and tested these big bags to fill them with fresh water and then make a big train of them and ship them over the ocean. But the problem is you need a boat to pull all of these. And so that's a very costly venture. But there again, with the wing generator, you can directly power boats. It's a way to directly power a boat with wind, and it's a much more efficient system than using sails in a sailboat because of the sliding factor in a sailboat. The wing generator would directly power propellers at the bottom of the boat, and literally for free we could move this water from the Antarctic or Greenland, the ice cap where it's literally being dumped right into the ocean, we could move that water off to places that, especially coastal areas. In many of the drought areas, the high population drought areas, are near the edge of the ocean on the coastline, within 5 miles of the coastline. So this would be a way to harvest fresh water, perfectly clean fresh water. And by the way, when water freezes, it also sterilizes it. It kills the bacteria. So, and it's very fresh. It's not filled with sediment. It's very fresh water. And so that would be, in fact, that's one of my 11 world mega projects, is to capture and manage water. Another one of the ideas is to take water from the Mississippi River that is the spring runoff, and we're only a few months away from that now in April, starting in April of 2016, to divert that water, which now just dumps into the Gulf of Mexico. All of the fertilizer causes a bloom and kills off that big region around the Mississippi Delta, down there past New Orleans, at Baton Rouge, down into the Gulf of Mexico, kills off that vast area every year because the bloom is so heavy that nothing can live there. It basically kills off that area. So it would solve two problems at once. We'd move that water over to the American Southwest, so Oklahoma, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, and eastern Southern California would have a tremendous water supply, and we could start greening that area. We'd have so much food, the world would not know what to do with it all, because the water would come in with fertilizer. It would be instant agriculture on a scale that the world has never seen before, fruit, vegetables, etc. And so anyway, you can see what I'm doing. I'm starting to work on projects that are literally going to solve the world's problems. And these are doable. These are not pie in the sky. But what do we have? We have a government that has no interest in solving these problems. They're more interested in fighting a war in the Middle East. And that's a giant, absolute disaster right now. So I just want to repeat a little story here. There are some people out there that live in the middle United States, and they don't see a problem. They don't see a problem in the world. And that in itself is a problem. The people who don't think there's a problem, those people are a problem because they prevent the rest of us from actually doing things and moving this out-of-control government in a direction. We are absolutely being inundated with GMO food, genetically modified food, fluorinated water, which keeps everybody walking around in a daze. Fluoride is a very bad chemical, and it makes people really sleepwalk. That's what the end effect is. It's in the water. It's in the toothpaste. You get a big dose of it every day, and it's also a carcinogen. It causes cancer. But that's just one of the issues. GMO food, the pharmaceutical industry, chemtrail spraying, the fertilizers they use and the pesticides in food, which are, then you're eating every day. There's just all of these problems that really need to be solved. And you'll find that these are concentrated in the United States. They've outlawed GMO foods in most other countries. They've outlawed beef and meat products from the United States and Europe. Most other countries will not take meat from the United States because of the antibiotics injected into the animals, either in the food or through needles, and the fact that the meat is raised in a very closed environment, very unsanitary environment. People here don't understand that in other countries, they won't eat meat that comes from the United States. I'm not going to enumerate all these things, but there are solutions. Turn the tide. Turn these things around. But the water situation in the world is critical. There are solutions. There are ways to manage this. The government is not going to do it. We have to take private action and move this world in a positive direction. And like I say, there are people that are more than happy to take their hard-earned money and put towards these solutions. One thing that I've done is provide, I'm not a rich person, but I have ideas. People are taking those ideas seriously, and we're going to start to implement them. These things have already been started. And as they become more visible, then we're going to start making them more public. But the Thanksgiving message is here. I apologize for beginning with that rather rude scenario of the people walking down the road looking for water. And let me tell you, when you're there and you're seeing that, for me, Thanksgiving Day, I'm thankful for all the things that I have, my education, my career, that has been more than fruitful. But when I see people that don't have any ability to make a change in their lives, and they don't have something as essential as clean water, I'm going to do something about it. I'm going to do whatever I can do to help this out. I'm just going to make a quick mention of a project that I have going on. It's on my webpage. It's being crowdfunded right now. And the crowdfunding is not what I'd call a success at all, but it has gained exposure, and there's a lot going on in the background. But essentially, your computer, your laptop, your tablet, your cell phone has been invaded. Everything you do on that is recorded and sent off to a government, basically, database. Everything, every conversation you have. And this is the problem is that Windows, for one, and by the way, do not load Windows 10 into your computer. It is infiltrated with spyware, and you will not be able to turn that off once it's in your computer. It's unbelievable. You may as well just call it NSA 10. So Windows is an operating system. This is the core central program in your computer. Windows, that has, you know, initiated from Microsoft decades ago. Also Android. There was a study just done by Google, none other than Google, saying that 90% of Android devices in the last 2 years have been compromised. In other words, there's spyware in your Android device, whether it's a tablet, whether it's a smartphone, whatever. 90% of those devices have been infiltrated, have bugs in them where they're monitoring people, actually have the ability to turn the camera on and watch you, even if the phone is turned off. Yes. Excuse me. So it's a tremendous situation. And so anyway, my solution, once again, I know what the major problems are. For 25 years of my career, I worked in the telecommunications industry. 10 of those years, I was a systems engineer in a company where we built operating systems. We built IBM-compatible telecommunications computers. We built encryption systems, so this is something I know a little bit about. And anyway, the crowdfunding effort, it's called Windroid's 11 OS. And what it is a bug-free operating system for your Android device or your Windows device. And you can pick which one you want the look-alike. It's going to look exactly like Windows. It's going to look, or if you choose for Android, it'll look exactly like Android. And the only trouble is, or the only benefit is, I should say, is that you will not have any spyware in it, and it will prevent any spyware from operating in your telephones, tablet, smart device, computer, laptop, whatever. And you can just load this into your computer. It's going to look just like what you're using now. And this has been, this is actually something I announced many times on my radio show before. And so that's going on right now. And like I say, many of these things, the public view, the crowdfunding effort is not really succeeding. You can go there and contribute. Also tell your friends by doing a Facebook like on it so that other people, your friends, get to see it. But also in the background, this is something that's succeeding. But I'll talk more about that later. But these are efforts that I have. The wing generator to cure the energy problem. The water filter systems to cure the water problem and organizing people to go into these third world countries and help them get clean water. That's underway. The wing generator to use to provide power for boats to move these large water bags. And these are enormous water bags that are long linear bags, and they hook together, and you can pull them and move that fresh water from a place like Antarctica where it's just shooting off into the ocean, capture it and drag it to some place where they need water. These are solutions. And then the Windroids, because in communication everything you do is being censored and monitored, and all your friends, all your communications, everything you do is being monitored today, and that's the purpose of Windroid's 11 OS, is to get rid of that. Okay, so anyway, I'm going to talk the last few minutes of the show about what the world should be like. Now, you have to go back about 150 years after the Civil War. Remember that the U.S. West was being opened and populated. The people were just walking out there with covered wagons. Most of the people walked. Not many people had a ride back then. Only maybe the women, or say if a woman was pregnant, they'd put her on a wagon. But other than that, those people walked. Some of them walked from Philadelphia to Seattle, or somewhere in between, or down into Oklahoma. All those places were populated by people who literally walked. Some of them had a horse, maybe, but most of them didn't. But the point is, when you went out there and you took that piece of land, and by the way, in Russia today, Putin is giving away land to the people. Just saying, here, they've got vast areas of land. He's saying, go out there, If you can make a home out of it, man, do it. So these people, these Russian people, are going out on the land, developing agriculture, and they're pioneering, just like back in the 1800s. Why don't we do that here? We've got a lot of land and a lot of poor people and a lot of people that need some place to go. But open up the land in this country and get back to the small farm where people raise their crops locally. The food comes from 2 or 3 miles from where you are. And by the way, I've been living like this for many years now, where the food that I eat, the water that I drink, etc., comes right from here. No fluoridation in my water, using energy that's literally free and no cost. But imagine a world today in which your house literally didn't cost you much at all, maybe under $10,000. And in a couple days, your friends would all come over, you'd build the house. There would be no need for insurance, because if your house burnt down, all your friends would come back and help you rebuild it. But the idea that you are forced to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, which takes you 30 years to pay off for your house, is absurd. We should have electric vehicles. They had electric vehicles in the early 1900s. The first automobiles were electric. And we should have electric automobiles today. We shouldn't be working 40-hour a week jobs to pay for all this and simply paying interest on everything. This is absurd. So the life of today, medical treatment should just be free. And we should be paying doctors, a good salary, etc. But the idea is that medical, the way it's set up today, it's only for a very small group of people. Because most people, say under Obamacare, can't afford their copays. And so they're not receiving medical treatment. This is not a solution. But back in the 1800s, people ate healthy food. Most of the medical problems today come from poisoned water, from bad water, from chemicals in the water, from food that contains chemicals and has no nutritive value. And that's one of the biggest problems today, is people do not have proper nutrition. You go to the store, big head of lettuce, you have a nice big salad, you're eating an apple a day, but they contain chemicals and they don't have nutrition. So people are sick. The United States is one of the sickest, medically sick countries in the world, because we don't have real food, we don't have clean water, we have chemicals in everything, we have pharmaceuticals in the groundwater. We need to clean this up and get back to a lifestyle where we have clean living, we have social development between the families, the family has time to live together, to sit down and eat together and talk, etc. Anyway, this is Thanksgiving Day 2015. I want to set a positive direction for all of us to follow. And I know what I'm doing. I'm trying to help this world turn around and get going in a direction where we can all live a decent life. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.